Flashback Twin Cities. Good morning, I am Tom Osman on AM 1220 KLBB. James, good morning.
Good morning, how are you doing?
I'm great, how was the week?
Oh man, it was busy, but it was good.
Anticipating the big day, right?
The big day.
Flashback Twin Cities.
Oh, every day.
So today we have a great guest. We have Bob Bruce, was the former Channel 5 KSTV sports director, news anchor, and talk show host for 12 years. He's going to be calling in live in the next segment. We're going to talk a little bit about, again, winter carnivals and Super Bowls and all the things we do to keep sane when it's cold, even though it's a balmy 23 degrees. Is that what the weather report said?
You know what? It was actually pretty nice. I'm not sure what it is, though.
If we get 2 weeks of below zero, you know, that 20 degree just feels like a heat wave.
Yep, there it is, 27.
Oh, perfect.
I can deal with that all week.
So, James, tell me, you were talking before the show started. You went and saw Reefer Madness. Now, this is a family show, but...
No, this is not a family show.
Oh, okay. We'll change it next hour, then.
Well, it was interesting. Have you seen Reefer Madness before?
I've seen the film, yes.
The original, in 1936, I think it was.
Wow.
They definitely updated this one a little bit and added a little raunch to it. But the music was great. The crowd was just laughing hysterically. Times changed, I guess, a little bit in the storytelling.
Well, you take everything into context, and what was what was scandalous 10 years ago, 30 years ago, 50 years ago is tame today.
My favorite part was definitely where the guy shows up outside of his girlfriend's house. She comes out in her nightie. She says, "What are you doing out in the middle of the night? It's 9.
It's 9 o'clock. You should be in bed."
Times have changed.
TV, I think TV only, there was no TV in the 30s, but I think the radios were probably signing off at that point, and everyone was going to bed and getting ready to work on the crops next morning, especially here in Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
But we talked last week a little bit about the Winter Carnival, and the Winter Carnival in 1986. But the last Ice Palace, the second last Ice Palace, was in 1992, and the Super Bowl was here. And did you watch the big game?
You know, I saw the very tail end of the game.
Yeah,
I was kind of a loser. Went out with my friend and watched The Hobbit. Because we didn't have a team in this.
And were you guys the only ones in the theater?
There were two other people.
Okay, well.
And, of course, the heat went out long before we got there. So it's 3 hours of sitting in the cold.
Well, the power went out of the Super Bowl and the heat went out of the movie theater. It's pretty fitting.
It works well.
So when the Super Bowl was here, and I was looking up some facts on this, the attendance was 63,130, the second lowest only to the first Super Bowl's attendance of 61,946. The Metrodome was the smallest stadium to ever host a Super Bowl, and to date it is the most northern Super Bowl ever played. So you take Miami, you take New Orleans, you take Minneapolis. It's I guess it's not ideal for your Super Bowl condition.
Did they consider it a huge success back in the day with that many people?
You know, I don't recall what the reception was. I'm looking at the attendance, and I'm guessing that the NFL owners want as many tickets sold as possible.
Oh,
so that
of course,
might be
yeah.
one of the reasons, one of the few reasons why we haven't had a Super Bowl back here. But HBO, in their service to the community, was trying to prepare us here and trying to prepare the country on what a Super Bowl in Minneapolis might be like. This cold climate, again, you know, we talked about last week, East Coast writer in 1886 who wrote this is a Siberian wasteland that no one would ever live here. So I think that the people at HBO read that. I think they took it to heart, even though it had been, 100 years since that had been written. And they produced a little program to prepare the nation what a Super Bowl in the Minneapolis frozen Siberia would look like. Let's listen to a little bit of what HBO wanted us to know.
Super Bowl 26 visitors will find that most people here in Minnesota don't fight winter. They embrace it. Like here at Forest Lake, site of the $115,000 Golden Rainbow Ice Fishing Contest. I think I see one.
Among the contest rules, dead or frozen fish are ineligible, and prize winners must agree to a polygraph exam.
3 ounces.
A quiet pursuit? Some of these ice anglers know otherwise.
My truck fell in the lake. Well, it didn't fall all the way in, but fell in, you know.
The Super Bowl's favorite weather color is usually sunny yellow. But this year, the NFL agreed to bring back the Ice Age. Here they lend a new meaning to the term ice fox. But ice carvers tend to be choosy about their blocks. They also have to be cautious, because believe it or not, sometimes it's too cold to dice the ice.
Well, as it gets colder below zero...
They think it's a little condescending. They think they're making it sound like we don't know what we're doing here.
I think they... I disagree. I think they say we know what we're doing. We're just really hokey.
Well, they always do find the greatest people to interview when they want to talk about a community. So let's listen to another clip of this, and this is this includes some of our media people and some of our businesses and what they were doing to prepare people for the big game.
Yes, the cold and gray can make you crazy. That's why the Finger Hut Company here recently put its employees on a flight to find the sun.
On behalf of Sun Country Airlines and Fingerhead Corporation.
Of course, in this state, a weatherman's wisdom is precious.
Quite often, when I talk about the weather in the Twin Cities, I will use a verse. And there's one that goes like this. When the clouds are wild and the horse winds blow, and the lanes and hollows with drifts are piled, I think of violets under the snow.
I purchased every tube of chapstick in town. And I'm selling them at $100 a piece.
Weather legend Bud Kraelin giving his poetry on how to describe weather in Minnesota.
That's fantastic. We are really hokey when it comes to things
like this. Exactly. It's this aired on HBO the day before the Super Bowl back in 1992. And let's keep in mind, this was the same calendar year. Well, it was the same year that the Twins won the World Series. They'd won just a few months prior. We did have the Ice Palace. Things were going well, and I think it was only 45 below that day.
It was a warm day.
A little warmer than that. This is Flashback Twin Cities, and we are going to be talking to Bob Bruce. And I do want to invite people to tweet TC Media Now on Twitter. Also, the website is tcmedianow.com. If you like some of the audio and video audio I play today, that is from tcmedianow.com. You can also contact through tcmedianow.com or call in 651-275-1220. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we will have Bob Bruce on live from location. I do not know where he is, but he's calling in live. And we'll have some great clips and talk a little bit about Bob's career here in Minnesota when we come back on Flashback Twin Cities on AM 1220 KLBB. Flashback Twin Cities, AM 1220, KLBB. And do we have a guest on the line, James?
Oh, we certainly do.
Let's bring him on.
Good morning.
Morning, Bob.
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
I'm great. Where are we calling you from today?
Where am I calling from?
Exactly.
I am sitting right now at my home in Scottsdale, Arizona. I would say another 500,000 Minnesotans who are down here this time of year.
True enough. And, you know,
last night I was up at a place in Cave Creek where they have live bull riding every Wednesday and Friday night. And I'm sitting there, and all the whole row behind me, they were all from in and around the Minneapolis area.
That's great. And it's a balmy 27 degrees we established today, so you're missing some great January or February weather here, and another winter carnival. But I'm sure that the weather in Scottsdale will more than make up for that.
Yeah, we've had some cold weather this year. It was funny when I first got out here right after Christmas. They had temperatures in the 30s, and they were like setting up shelters, and they were just freaking out. It was like, the 30s. Are you kidding? We'd be walking around in a swimsuit in Minneapolis.
No, I mean, it was we had our 10 below week, and now it's 20s, and we're going to wear wearing cargo shorts and t-shirts now outside.
I remember a time when I lived on Cedar Lake. I had my house on Cedar Lake. That literally in the middle of February once, the snow was just raining. I rode my bicycle across Cedar Lake. It was like 50 degrees. It had been like zero forever, and it popped up, and people were just doing bizarre things.
Yeah, you give up all this for a winter of golf. I don't get it, but somehow we do it.
I'm sure you miss the cabin fever.
Wow, right. We were just talking about the Super Bowl was here in 1992. It was after you had left, but we were talking a little bit about it was the northernmost Super Bowl ever played and one of the lowest attended. And I guess that the NFL owners just felt that Minneapolis is not the place to drive the most attendance to. But now we have a new stadium coming up. And you, of course, were here for the last outdoor stadium the Vikings played in that closed down. And then this dome thing came around, was going to be the stadium of the future.
And those are the worst buildings ever built. It reminds me of Three Rivers Stadium that the Steelers played in for so long, and what everybody was so emotionally attached to it. But as a stadium, it was terrible. And that's one thing I really liked on it as a sportscaster, was seeing new stadiums and going to new places. The only Super Bowl I ever covered was not in Minnesota or whatever, because I did the Bud Grant show and traveled with the Vikings. And, of course, they would always get close, and then they'd rip my heart out. They got the Philadelphia once, the NFC title game, Washington. They almost got there so many times. And then I'm in Pittsburgh, and I've been in news, been a news anchor for a long time at that point. And the news director comes to me and says, hey, the Steelers are going to Super Bowl. We know you have experience. We want you to go. Lead some of the coverage. So I said, great. And then I'm thinking to myself, are they going to Miami? No. New Orleans? No. The Rose Bowl? No. They're going to Detroit.
Of course.
It was freezing cold. It was terrible.
Well, it's
but we won the game.
And you covered, did you cover only Winter Olympics or did you cover a Summer Olympics too? I know you covered the 84 Olympics.
Yeah, we never covered the Summer Olympics at that point, because the reason we were so much into Winter Olympics is that there were so many Minnesotans that were involved in it.
Right, right.
So we actually, one of the only regret I have for my entire career, the only regret that was devastating to me, is that I set up, went to Lake Placid, found a place to live, it was impossible, set it up. We were one of only two organizations, and Sarajevo was the same way. At that time, local stations didn't go and cover the Olympics. They couldn't do it.
Right.
But KSTP and a station from Wisconsin that had a lot of the speed skaters, we got credentials to do the 1980 Olympics. So I'm all set, ready to go. I'm ready to go out there. And at the last minute, and this is back in the old days, my boss, Stanley Hubbard, a good friend, comes to me and says, well, you can't go because you're our main sports anchor, and it's a rating book. We can't have you off the air, so we're going to have to replace you. And so Rob Lear went instead of me.
But you did get to do the snowmobile race, though.
The greatest hockey game ever played.
That's right.
And I'm sitting in the studio the whole time going, I can't believe this. I can't. I know all these guys. I covered the team. I can't believe this. So that was the one big downer for me when it came to the Olympics. Sarajevo was a lot of fun, though. I mean, we spent like a month and a half over there. We were over there forever.
So Rob owes you big. So when I see Rob next time, I'm going to tell him, I'm going to remind him about this.
Oh, next time you see Rob, he owes me big in many ways.
Oh, well, of course, of course. But you did, but Bob, you did get to do the snowmobile race. I mean, you didn't get to see the big USSR USA game, but the snowmobile race in 80, that was almost as good, right?
Which snowmobile race?
Wasn't this the big snowmobile track you went on up to Canada?
Oh, and that was before 1980. That was like 1978.
Okay.
And it was the great Winter Carnival snowmobile race. And I don't think they do it anymore, but in those days, they would literally go from Winnipeg, Canada, over 500 and something miles down to White Bear Lake. And there would be like 500 snow machines start that race. And we'd go like 100 miles a day, a little more than 100 miles a day. And these are guys doing like in the old days, this is back in, late 70s, these guys were doing 100 miles an hour in the ditches, road ditches, even then. So they do this race, and I said, I'm going to go up and do it because I used to participate in a lot of stuff. And Skidoo sponsored me, gave me a brand-new machine, everything else. The only thing is, I'd never ridden a snowmobile.
Well, I mean,
so the first day, I learned very quickly that you have to get up off, in those days, didn't have quite the cushioning and stuff. I just beat myself to death the first day. And I'm going along at the very end of the dam, tired, and I go off a driveway, and it's like a 6-foot drop.
Oh, no.
So I hit, and I hit the windshield. I cut my nose. I still have a wrinkle over my nose to this day from that. And a guy picked me up, took me to the hospital in Canada. They put some Steri-Strips on it, should have stitched it. So I had two black eyes, reported on it for the next 3 days, and out of 500 machines, I think there may be 125 that finished, which I was one of them. So I still have. And then when we went to the Old Schmidt Brewery, and they had a trophy they gave me, which was the Ham's Bear, a big Ham's, like 12-inch bear with two Band-Aids on his nose. They still have that thing.
If you keep that, that's worth some dollars these days, because the ham stuff is pretty scarce here. That's great. I actually want to play a clip. This is Bob Bruce. He's calling live from Arizona, former KSVP sports director, news anchor, and talk show host. The Met. The Met closed in 82 and it was torn down in 85. And
I was there. I was there at the last game.
Well, let's play a little audio from the day the Met was torn down.
We'll cheer for him anyway. Finally, in sports, the beginning of the end for Metropolitan Stadium in Bloomington. The old Met has stood empty since the Twins and the Vikings moved downtown 3 years ago. Demolition of the stadium was inevitable, and that process, started this afternoon. The city of Bloomington will be developing the property, but of course, for many Minnesotans, the Met will still be there at the corner of Cedar and 494 long after the stadium has been replaced by shopping areas, housing units, and office buildings. The Met had been a fixture at that intersection since the mid-1950s. The stadium first opened in 1956. Professional sports came to the Twin Cities 5 years later, and the Met was home to both the Twins and the Vikings for the better part of two decades. Ironically, one of the first sections of the stadium to be completed some 30 years ago was the first to come down this afternoon.
There it crashes.
The demolition of the Met was a sentimental occasion for some of the men who made their living there. People like Bill Brown, Bob Allison, and Hall of Famer, the great one, Harmon Killebrew.
Well, I think it's going to be a little bit of sadness to see it go, and I think, as I say, the tailgating part of it and everything that went along with it, the fans seemed to get closer and the people got closer. So I think that's a big part of the life around here that's going to be missed.
But don't worry, we have the Dome, and now we have the Mall of America.
I laugh listening to that, because I don't know who that guy is, because it sounds like a 15-year-old. I must not have reached puberty at that point. With my
That's point. A little rough.
But the last day of the Met, the last game, I'll never forget that, because I saw some amazing games there, including the miracle catch by Ahmad Rashad that got the against the Browns in the last second. I'll tell you a story about that in a moment. But the last game, at the very end of the game, and the Vikings lost the game, and all of a sudden you heard, like hammers hammering and just noises everywhere. And so I'm sitting in the press box, I'm looking around, and people are dismantling the stadium. I mean, this could never happen today. They're literally unbolting chairs and benches and everything else and walking out with them, and nobody's doing anything. There are people going up on the scoreboard and ripping stuff off the scoreboard. They finally had to get people to keep them from going. It sounded like a construction scene because there was people brought their tools in and basically started tearing down
That's
the stadium.
Great.
Think how much money the city saved by having the fans dismantle the stadium for them.
And now somebody's got an entire dinner table set up of these stadium seats.
No, I've seen people in their basements here in Minneapolis, St. Paul that do have Met Stadium seats in their basement. And I knew two people at least that have Met Stadium seats in their home.
And I envy them.
They look like stadium seats too, but as long as the story is there and someone can verify it, they work. Bob, I want to talk a little bit about your early days on getting in broadcasting and how you came to be here. You're from Memphis, and what drove you into broadcasting?
Well, I played all sports when I was in high school, and I was a pretty good offensive tackle. And we actually my senior year, and this is the days where you had you didn't separate the class. It's like the old hockey tournament in Minnesota. Little tiny school. I was the first graduating class, and we played against one of the biggest schools in the state for the state championship. We lost the game, but I was an offensive tackle. I was the blindside tackle, actually. And I played against three different guys that night, a defensive tackle. All of them weighed over, 260 pounds. And I think two of them got college scholarships to the SEC. And I went to, so I started as that. Knew I wasn't going to be big enough down south to be able to go out and play college football. So early on in high school, I had a speech teacher, and I started focusing on trying to become a sportscaster. And basically, as soon as I got out of high school, got into college radio, Got a job at WSAO Radio in Senatobia, Mississippi. A 5,000-watt daytimer, used to travel all over the state down there, and we couldn't broadcast live because we would sign off at sundown, and we would record the whole game on a Friday night and replay it on Saturday morning. And believe it or not, people bought advertising in that. So from there I got a tremendous break at the age of 20. This is like 1974. At the age of 20 years old, I got hired at the station that I had been a studio cameraman when I was in college. They said, do you want to come in and audition to be a weatherman? And I said, well, I want to be sports. So, well, that's the job we have. So I went in and I got the job as a weekend weatherman, and I did that for a little while, then worked my way into being the weekend sportscaster. And then I knew the guy in front of me would be there forever, which he was. So I went from there to Dallas, Texas, got a job as an assistant there. Vern Lundquist and I became really good friends when I was down there. That's when Vern was on local TV. And then I went from Dallas to Omaha, and I was the sports director in Omaha, and Mr. Hubbard had ordered a research company. He said, go find me a sportscaster. And somehow, some way, they found out about me, and one day I got this call, and I flew up. I had lunch with Mr. Hubbard at the St. Paul Athletic Club, and I'm sitting there, and I don't realize what's going on. Didn't do an audition or anything. I just talking to him, and he said, come here with me. And he took me out in the hallway. He said, what are you making in Omaha? And I told him, and he said, if we double that, is that fair? I said, yes, sir. Oh. And he said, okay, we've got a deal. And I said, well, do I need a contract? He says, you'll get a contract, trust me. Trusted him ever since. The man was very instrumental in my life, very instrumental in getting me to where I am today, and you know, truly owe him a lot, because that was at 25 years old to come to Minneapolis. There was nobody. I never forget the guy in the Minneapolis Tribune said, I was discovered by Frank Maggot. That's a research guy.
Right.
I was discovered by Frank Maggot in a nursery school on a hobby horse reading Mother Goose fairy tales.
That was probably John Carmen probably wrote that.
Yeah, it was John Carmen.
Oh, yeah. Trust me, when I had Dennis Falcon on 2 weeks ago. And
great guy.
And I had Kirsten Lundquist on last week, and everyone has the same story when they come to Minneapolis. They come from California or Florida, in Dennis's case, and they come up here to interview, and it's always the worst possible day to come up here. It's always a blizzard. They always talk about going out to dinner or talking to the people that are going to do the hiring, and always surprised of either the opportunity that awaits them here or the equipment. And in KSAP's case, in the weather department, was very innovative and had a lot of money that they were putting into Doppler radar. And in the sports case, I'm guessing, and you came up and you obviously
time. Do you know that it's been one time in the sports department, we had 13 people. I was the sports director, so I never went. I did the schedules. I never went to the news desk for anything. We had our own live truck operator. We had our own photographers. Denny DeGrizel, one of the greatest photographers ever. I had two producers, Gary Schultenberg, who now teaches at St. Thomas, Paul Hipp, who I think is still doing some stuff. So, I mean, we had 13 people in there. It was, and then we had, like, you know, Eddie Cairo, Rob Lear, Joe Schmidt. It was amazing the things that we could accomplish. And in those days, believe it or not, I only have one Emmy, and I won that Emmy in Arizona for Best Live Reporting. We would have had 150 Emmys during the time that I was there. But at that time, Mr. Hubbard didn't believe that we should have other people judge us. Like, who are those other people to judge us?
Mm-hmm.
They eventually changed their tune on that. But like the Sarajevo Olympics, I mean, nobody. We were the only TV station in the country that did that. I mean, it was just we did things like one time I went over. I don't know if you remember this name, Fratasek Musil. But at one point,
yes.
Lou Manny wanted to get this guy, and he was going to defect from Czechoslovakia. So we got the scoop. Louie, myself, and a photographer, went over to Europe, and we go into Italy, and we're going to go into Czechoslovakia and get this guy out.
And this is when you couldn't go to Czech Republic. This is 85, 86, right?
Yeah, this is when, you know, they were behind the Iron Curtain thing.
Right.
So we go into Yugoslavia, and of course I got previous experience at Yugoslavia now, and we drive across the whole country, which Louis lasted driving about half an hour, and I thought he's going to kill us because there are no speed limits or anything. I said, I'm driving. If I'm going to die, it'll be at my own hands. So we drive across, meet this guy in Zagreb, go to the airport. We think the Czechoslovakian police are trying to, you know, get him, so we're not talking on the phones or anything. We go to the police. Dave Durenberger, the senator, is trying to grease the skids. We get him on a plane to London, and then I have to call Mr. Hubbard and say, Mr. Hubbard, I said, you know, they're coming back on the Concorde. I said, if we're going to stay on this story, we got to, it was like $2,500 for one person one way back in those days.
Right, right.
So he said, well, if we have to do that to do the story, let's do it. So we hop on the Concorde, fly to New York, which was a very nice flight, by the way, fly to New York, get on the tarmac, and we'll go right through customs. Durenberger, they didn't even talk. We right through, get on a Northwest flight, and we're sitting on the runway, and we take off, and we land, and we were going to be the big lead story. Huge. And that happened to be the day that the tornado hit up in, was it Hopewell, or I forget where it was, and Channel 11 there, CARE, had video from the helicopter.
In July,
pretty
18,
famous video.
July
that was the same day. So the story got pushed way down in the newscast, even though we spent zillions of dollars to get it.
Well, you know what? I do have the video of that, and that actually is going to prompt me to put on tcmedianow.com. Again, this is Bob Bruce calling from Arizona, former KSDP news anchor, sports director, and talk show host, talking a little bit about the glory days of Channel 5. And Bob, keep in mind, to the people listening today, Channel 5 was number one. I mean, they weren't. They may not have won an Emmy claiming that they were the best, but they were number one in the ratings. You were record-breaking ratings.
You look at ratings today, I remember we used to have the cover broadcast magazine a lot. In fact, I have a cover broadcast magazine with just my hand and the number one finger. I remember Skip, our photographer, took that to put in the ad. We had over a 50 share.
Right.
When it was Dennis Falcon, Ron Majors, and Bob Bruce. There were three guys with a 50 share. Within 2 months of being in town, I was recognized everywhere. I can still come back to the cities, which I do a lot because my brother-in-law lives there and sister-in-law. I've got very dear friends, so I go to Minneapolis a lot. So I get recognized all the time, and I'll never forget my son and I were at Galyan's at the time, which is now owned by Dick's, which is based in my hometown, Pittsburgh, where I live 6 months out of the year. So anyway, we're sitting in the line, and all of a sudden a guy behind me goes, "Hey, Brucey, Brucey." And I turn around, and it's a young guy that I knew when he was, nobody knew who he was. Paul Hipp came to me one day and said, this guy, this year, is going to go up to the Twins and is going to be an unbelievable guy. Got to know him when nobody, when he wasn't famous and everything else, was very dear, really neat guy. And I turned around, and it was kind of sad because it was Kirby Puckett, and he was kind of looking from one side.
Oh,
and
wow.
You know, Kirby was, but, I mean, he said, my son's sitting there going, I can't believe this. He says, hey, Brucey, what are you doing?